Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing podcast.
And then I saw the shark coming by. It was just a nurse shark, I think, and had these two big yellow-tailed jacks riding right on its tail. And they do that because as the shark spooks up the little bait fish, they'll swim right off and clean up the smaller fish. So I threw a popper right over them, and this one just comes up and boom, just smacks it right on top of the water and ripped me out to my backing, you know, immediately. And
that was Ryan Jarvis with a quick and powerful saltwater story. We are digging in deep on fly lines, both fresh and salt, today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
How you doing today? Thank you for swinging in and checking out the show. Before we get going, just want to remind you, if you have a show topic or idea you'd love us to dig into, maybe a person you'd love us to connect with, you can send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com, or wetflyswing on social, send a DM there as well. Rare Gear makes truly unique and innovative fishing gear to help you travel lighter, faster, and fish more. This telescoping fly rod doesn't need guides and packs up small enough to fit in the pocket of your backpack. This is likely the most unique rod you've seen this year, so you're going to have to check this one out for yourself. You can head over to raregear.com right now to check it out. That's reyrgear.com. Check it out right now. Fish Hounds Expeditions is putting together remote Alaskan wilderness trips for that trip of a lifetime. And this is not the lodge-style trip that you hear a lot about. This is actually floating down a remote Alaska river, mousing for rainbows, and camping out under the great Alaskan sky. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/fishhound right now to connect with Adam and the Fish Hound crew. That's Fish Hound, F-I-S-H-H-O-U-N-D. Right now, we've got some big stuff coming this year. Ryan Jarvis, a.k.a. Jarvis, is here from Monic Fly Lines to break down fly lines so you have a better feel for the types of lines out there and their uses. We find out how the different materials affect performance of a line, what the clear dry line is all about with Monic, and which lines and tips you should be using for certain specific species. We dig into a number today. This is another fun one, including one at least one tangent into the African wilderness for a hunting trip. So without further ado, here he is, Jarvis from Monic.com.
How's it going, Jarvis?
It's going good, Dave. I appreciate you having me on. I'm psyched to be on the podcast, and yeah, I'm excited.
Nice. Yeah, this is fun. We've been chatting. This is one we've been chatting for a little while. It was pretty cool because, again, I would go back to these shows, right? The cool thing about these shows, whether it's a, you know, kind of a business type show or just, you know, connecting with people that are buying products and things. I mean, IFTD, we connected for the, you know, kind of, well, I guess it wasn't, let's see now, I'm trying to backtrack. I guess in person, I connected with Dennis Isbister for the first time. And then with you guys, we connected, you know, on that event, we had a beer there, right? How did IFTD go for you?
Oh, IFTD was great. You know, and it was great to see you again. I think we had met previously at the fly fishing show or IFTD 2 years past just because it had gotten canceled that 1 year. But, you know, IFTD is a great show. Always so much fun having, you know, the whole fishing, fly fishing community kind of come together and seeing new faces, you know, seeing good friends that you'd met before. And it was actually a really great time specifically because we had handed out a lot of samples just to guides and people in the industry and, you know, the previous show, And we just got amazing feedback from everybody, and people really loving the lines, and had quite a few people coming up saying, we voted for your line for, you know, new fly line for saltwater category. So we were super excited and just had a good time. And yeah, like I said, you really can't have more fun than having all the fly fishing community come together and sharing a beer and, you know, talking yep. fishing. So always a good time.
Exactly. Yeah, that was good. So cool. Yeah, well, we're going to dig into a little bit on Monic fly lines and some of the cool stuff you have going. We're going to talk about that. Before we get into that and a little bit of a fly lines 101 refresher, talk about how you first got into fly fishing, then we'll take it into Monic.
Yeah, totally. So fly fishing has kind of always been in my life. Actually, growing up, my grandfather lived in Montana, just outside of Kalispell, and we would go out there in the summer, and that was my first ever time being introduced to fly fishing. And just, I still remember to this day seeing my uncle out in the yard just throwing these long, you know, tight loops and casting. And I was just in awe. And that kind of always stuck with me. And he showed me to cast there. And I remember we actually went out on a float and we were fly fishing and just throwing like a single dry fly. And I kept having the fish come and eat my dry fly. And I just keep farming and missing these hook sets, and I was so frustrated, but that just kept me coming back and wanting more. So, and then actually my dad, while we were on the trip, he got really into it as well and got a whole setup, you know, fly rod, waders, reel, line and everything. And so when we went back to New Hampshire, which is where I grew up, I remember him being out in our driveway, putting down a little foam pad and just like target practicing. And we'd go down to the creek and stuff. And so it's always kind of been in my life. And, you know, kind of in high school, kind of got away from it a little bit with sports and everything. And then actually I came out to go to school at CU. I visited Colorado to see my aunt who lived in Louisville, actually. And when I came to visit her and saw the campus in Boulder, I just, you know, kind of fell in love and was lucky enough to get an academic scholarship so I could afford to go there. And then kind of being there, and I was like, didn't really hit me till, you know, a couple months in that I was in one of the best trout fishing, fly fishing areas in the country. And it just kind of dawned on me. So I had my dad had kind of gotten away from the sport a little bit. So he actually sent me all of his gear. So
wow,
that was kind of, it was his first setup, and then it ended up turning into my first setup. And it was a TFO Project Healing Waters rod. And it was just a great time kind of relearning everything. And actually was lucky enough to see that they had a free entry 101 course at Rocky Mountain Anglers here in Boulder. So went into the shop and, you know, they taught me a lot just in that class, and, you know, started learning more about nymphs and just everything. And it just kind of took off from there and really and took over my life. Like, it's all I wanted to do. Every time I had a free moment, I would always be down at the creek and just constantly getting out fly fishing. And so that was always kind of something that I loved. And then after college, I went back home to Maine for a little bit. Lived with my dad in Maine, and that was during the winter months, and, you know, winters in Maine can be a little rough. So I was like, man, I miss the mountains. I miss the Colorado sunshine, and more than anything, I mean, Maine has some great fishing as well. But I missed the Colorado Rockies trout fishing. So came back here and was lucky enough to find a job at Monic Fly Lines, jobs, and one popped up as a, you know, a manufacturing assistant slash office assistant for Monic Fly Line. So the rest was kind of went from there. Wow. Just got lucky enough. I started at Monic, and pretty soon after I left, the office manager actually he quit. So they're like, do you want to kind of step in that role? And from there, it just, you know, it's been about a little over 3 years now I've been working with Monic, and that's also taken over my life, you know, constantly eat, breathe, sleep, fly fishing, and specifically Monic. And it's just been such a great experience, you know, being able to work in an industry with something that you're so passionate about and you have such a love for it. it makes work a lot easier and more rewarding, I think.
Yeah, that's a great story. So yeah, so you're in it deep, and now you've got you've got everything going with Monty. I wanted to note before we kind of head on, you mentioned, you know, New Hampshire, Maine, and we recently had Bob Romano on in episode 314. He talked about like the Rangeley area and just gave us a little rundown on Maine. Have you done much fly fishing in the Northeast? Like, can you compare the two between like Colorado and the Northeast?
You know, I haven't dug deep into it. You know, I've been to like the local streams around where I grew up in New Hampshire, and then a few in Maine, but I've never quite made the trip up to Rangeley, which is something that's on my, you know, list for sure. It's such a beautiful area. Maine has a soft spot in my heart. You know, I love it there. It's just the way of life. You know, everybody's super friendly, but also kind of keeps to themselves in a way. Which is just great. And the brook trout fishing in Maine is amazing. I mean, it's nowhere near what it used to be, unfortunately, but it's still, you know, if you go drive up far enough north, you can just, you know, be completely secluded in wilderness and just find some amazing fishing opportunities. So it's definitely something that I'm going to make happen for sure. And then also, I really want to chase some stripers there up in Portland area, and something I haven't done yet. And that just looks like an amazing time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, this is good. And I want to dig into the fly lines a little bit here, but you mentioned something that was kind of interesting to me was the academic scholarship. So talk about that. So you know, that sounds like something, you know, and I remember when we first met, I remember looking at you thinking like, this guy's smarter than your average person out there. Talk about how do you get into that?
I don't know. I mean, I appreciate the praise. I don't know if I'm a genius or anything. I guess I'm pretty smart. I don't know. Anyways, like it's, so going to a small school, you know, sports was, you know, one of my loves. I love to play basketball, but you know, it's like a Division IV. So it's, you're not going to get any sports scholarships coming out of there. So I've always just, you know, excelled at school. It's something that came easy to me, and, you know, was lucky enough to have the grades. And coming from out of state, at CU, they offer a Chancellor's Scholarship, which is basically, you know, for students with like a high GPA coming from out of state, as well as doing some extracurricular stuff. You know,
gotcha.
I did do a little bit with the math team, kind of, you know, some side stuff, and then, you know, having all the sports and stuff. So
what's a high GPA? What's a, just to give us a rough, what's the cutoff limit?
I forget I think it was like over 3.5.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So you're up in the upper echelon.
Yeah. So I was just super fortunate because, you know, CU is a very expensive school, so I wouldn't have been able to go without the scholarship. And when that all kind of came together, it all hit me like, oh man, this is actually going to happen. I'm actually going to get to go to school in Boulder, Colorado. And that was just an amazing experience. I went in for environmental studies and quickly learned that was more just sort of kind of on the policy side, which didn't resonate as strongly with me. But actually I ended up taking an anthropology class, and that just stuck to me so much, like learning about the human history and learning about different cultures. And so I ended up being an anthropology major with a geography minor. So something that I really enjoyed. I still love, you know, learning about new anthropology news today. And one of the best experiences actually was going on a kind of like a study abroad for an anthropology course where we actually went to Tanzania in Africa and spent a month just going from different cultures, you know, staying a week with the Maasai, the Hadza, which the Hadza was by far my favorite experience. They're actually one of the last true hunter and gatherer societies left in the world.
Oh, wow. How do you spell that?
Hadza.
Okay.
It's also called Hadzabe, is like the name of the culture.
Okay.
And it's so cool. Like, you go out and just get to see them, you know, living off the land, getting honey from the bees, and, you know, drinking water out of the big baobab trees, which are those trees with the massive trunks. The coolest part about that was actually, it was about a group of like seven or eight of us, and one day we went out and just followed them along on a hike, and everybody's kind of talking and chatting, and I just felt like this isn't like the true hunting experience that, you know, I was familiar with from my right. grandfather and uncle. And so I just asked my teacher, I said, would it be all right if I just went out with some of the Hadza members to go on a hunt? And she said, of course, or, you know, asked some of the guys in the tribe, and actually just got to go out one-on-one with this younger kid. He was probably, you know, my age, like 18 to 21. So he was younger, and just went out one-on-one. His name was Mukalama, and that was just so cool, you know, being out in the African bush, you know, walking around, and he's got his bow and arrow in his hand with all his arrows that he's made from hand. And it hits you at some parts where you're like, oh man, I'm kind of out here in the bush, like if something happened, it'd be kind of yep. screwed a little bit. But he's like, it was just an amazing experience. And so I really enjoy anthropology, and I felt like it mixed really well kind of with fly fishing, kind of understanding, you know, the human history of fly fishing and just like how humans interact with nature. So that's mm-hmm. something that's always really resonated with me, and something that, you know, I continue to explore every time that I'm out fishing, because I think it's more, you know, not just about catching the fish, but kind of having that communication and connection with nature. And yeah, exactly. So
that's a great story. So the Hadza, what was from him, I can't even pronounce his name, but what was one thing you remember you kind of learned from him that he taught you?
You know, it's hard because there was like a little bit of a language barrier.
Right.
So they speak in a click language, actually, which is amazing to hear. But they do know some of the Swahili, which is like the national language there. But it was just, I think just seeing how calm he was, you know, being out in, like, that's his backyard.
Yeah.
And he just, like, seeing him just overlooking the whole landscape and just
what
really,
were you hunting?
You know, they'll kill anything they see pretty much for food. You know,
so
they
we're
actually,
talking big game potentially.
Yep. So we did see like a small kudu, which is kind of like an antelope, and we got down really low, kind of crawled, and right before he was about to make the shot, this kudu took right off. But primarily, their biggest game that they get consistently is, it's called like a pimby, and it's just kind of like almost like a groundhog, sort of, that lives on the rocks and stuff, and probably like this, like a size of, I don't know, like a huge prairie dog, I guess is how I would describe it. So we got like two of those on the trip, and it's crazy though, just how much, you know, they've seen their landscape change. To the elders and stuff, they used to see rhinos, giraffes, everything. And that was all fair game for them, you know, being, indigenous to the area. And that's, you know, that's been their way of life for thousands and thousands of years. And they actually they carry around one poison tips arrow where they get the poison from a desert rose. The one that's wrapped in leather, they're like, be careful, don't touch this. You're like in the back of your head. I'm like, all right, don't fall on this arrow. Cause
no kidding.
So,
wow. That's
but
cool.
I think just the biggest thing was just learning and seeing somebody that is truly in tune with nature and kind of just getting to experience that firsthand, because that's their whole life there.
Yeah, they're in touch. That's the really cool thing about this, because, you know, you look at the day and age, like even, you know, just look at everybody here, right, in the U.S. or even around the world. I mean, we've lost so much of that, right, that the local communities and the languages and stuff. And, you know, for you to be able to have that interaction, right, which probably most people in the world will never have that, that's pretty powerful. That's really cool you're able to do that.
Yeah, I feel extremely lucky to have had that experience, and I hope to, you know, be able to go back one day. And, you know, I love kind of the ecotourism side. I think it would be amazing to, you know, I love kind of the setups that they have down in, you know, South America, where they go fly fishing with the, you know, community members. They teach the community members to be fly fishing guides.
Oh, like Indie Fly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that stuff really resonated with me. So I thought it'd be cool to, you know, give back to the community and, you know, maybe like set up, you know, like a trip or something where you could go out and you could hunt with the Hadza and kind of maybe link in some fly fishing if I could, obviously.
Exactly. Nice. This is good. Well, I can already tell this conversation is going to be amazing because, you know, you keep bringing up topics that I'm interested in. And one of them is basketball. So I'm not going to dig into basketball because that was kind of my sport. Maybe we'll leave that till the end if we have time. But let's swing this and talk a little about lines because we want to dig into this for people. You know, the fly line thing is really interesting because we've talked a lot about it with spay lines and stuff because people can get confused with all the different tips and stuff like that. But let's take this down to like a fly lines 101 to start this off really quick. And we could, starting with trout lines, is probably the easiest way. So we could talk about that a little bit. But
Certainly. First,
talk about what you guys have there from Monic. And do you guys cover like everything? Do you have like all species, all lines?
Yeah. So we cover pretty much all applications. A lot of our lines are extremely versatile. That can be used, you know, across the board for trout, bass, you know, you can fish it in the tropics. One great thing about being PVC free is that all of our lines can be fished in fresh and salt water, and they're going to perform just as well. And it's not going to degrade the material at all just because it's the PVC free doesn't need those specific additives to gear it towards salt versus fresh water. One thing that you will find, though, is that some lines are more suited for warmer temperatures versus colder temperatures. But we do offer everything across the board. The one area that we are lacking in and we're currently working on really expanding is our sinking lines. Right now we only have one, which is just an intermediate clear. And what's hard about that is we use naturally buoyant plastics, which is great because they float very well. They don't need, you know, the glass beads, the floating agents, because they're just naturally buoyant materials. But on the flip side, to get those naturally buoyant materials to sink, it turns into a little bit of an issue.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so this is cool. So there's a bunch of topics here to dig into as well. But let's just start with the trout 101. So if somebody's coming in, the funny thing you think back in the day, the double taper line. I think we even joked about this right when we were at the booth. You know, the double taper versus wait for it. I mean, is anybody buying like double tapers anymore? And can we just like cancel that out? Like that's not something we need to think about.
I mean, you'll get your handful of guys. Usually, you know, the older generations that have been using a double taper since they started fly fishing, and that's just what they love to use. But primarily, you know, we had to just discontinue our double taper line just because the demand wasn't there. And, you know, it seems like everything's kind of moved more towards that, obviously, weight forward. And now you're starting to get a lot of really specific taper designs with a lot of different variations. But just kind of diving into sort of like the 101, which is actually one of our lines. We have the Monic 101, which is just going to be your basic trout line, 5 foot front taper, which is pretty standard. And then about a 20 foot belly on that with a 16 foot rear taper. So, you know, pretty good overall head design. It's something that's going to be, you know, it's going to turn over your dry flies easily, you know, still be able to roll cast it well, turn over some, you know, indicator multi-nymph rigs without an issue. And then kind of that longer rear taper helps you, you know, on longer mends, and kind of gives you a little bit more delicacy with the, you know, as it lays out on the water for those longer casts. But basically that's going to be your kind of standard traditional trout line, something with a, you know, sometimes you'll just see like a 5 foot front taper with like a 20 foot belly. So just for anybody that might not be familiar with that, the front taper like is where the line begins to change in diameter. So if you think of your welded loop on the front where you connect your leader, it's going to start to gradually grow in diameter, which is what helps that line roll over and turn over your leader along. And then your belly section is just going to be the largest portion, the thickest portion of that line, which has, you know, the most of the mass is right there, which just allows that line to, you know, propel forward and then continue to roll over. And then your rear taper is going to be where it starts to go back down in diameter, which really helps you shoot line because, you know, as you get thinner and thinner and then you get to the thinnest part, which is going to be your running line, and that's just going to be a level section for the rest of the line. And basically that kind of creates almost like a shooting head in a sense where you have all your mass up in the front of that line. So as you, you know, make a cast and shoot that line out, that's what propels it forward. And there's so much variation within that. You can start, you know, changing, you know, specific feet, you know, create different diameters, you know, thicknesses within the front taper, and then it can taper back down, or you could have kind of, it just, you know, there's so much variation within there, and it's really cool to dive in and see how much, you know, that taper really plays a role in, you know, both presentation and performance of the line.
That's right. That's right. And this is cool. So, and just to reiterate that basically on your line, so from the start, from your leader, you know, you've got your leader, and then the butt section attaches to the fly line. That's going to be the, that's going to be a thin section, and then it's going to build out wider and wider until it gets to the middle section.
Right. So you can think of, like, you know, just a 5-weight line, that tip section is going to be, you know, relatively thick compared to, like, a, say, a leader material. But yep. So it starts thin where you connect the line, say, you know, either with a nail knot, or all of our lines come with pre-welded loops.
Okay.
So it starts there, and then it grows in diameter, which is what helps. It grows in diameter until you reach the belly, and that change in diameter is what helps, kind of roll that leader over. So if you think of, like, your tapered leader, you know, you have 5X, say, on the tip of it, which is going to be the thinnest part, and then it grows into the thick butt section, and that's what turns that leader over. So it's very similar kind of to the fly line, but the fly line tapers can be a lot more in depth.
Yeah, in depth. So if somebody, just for the new person, there was a new person listening here that was thinking about, you know, getting a line, their first line or a new line, you know, can you break it down? I guess, for you guys, it sounds like the Monic 101 is the one to go with, but is there, you know, is it like 9-foot 5-weights within different companies? Do you feel like there's all sorts of different, you know, like there's a 5-foot tip, there's an 8-foot tip? Is there a lot? Because I know with spay stuff, there is a lot of variation, but do you find that, or is a standard 9-foot 5-weight line, or a, not 9-foot, but like a 5-weight line, going to be pretty standard across companies?
Yeah, it's going to, the 5-weight line is going to be, you know, pretty standard, just because of, you know, the 9-foot 5-weight being the staple rod for, you know, trout fishermen getting started specifically. And, you know, right now with rods, there's such a huge variation in just the action of the rod and kind of the grain weights that it takes to actually load that rod. So you'll see a lot of fly lines on the market are actually really heavily overweighted. You know, they can be, you know, we try to stick as close as possible to the AFTA weighting standards just to be as transparent. But, you know, with so many people being more used to and having more familiarity with it, casting a heavier line, if you have a line that is, you know, lighter than that, it can feel like it's not loading your rod properly, and you can think the line's not casting well, when that, in actuality, it's just, you need a heavier line to load that rod. So, you know, and I think especially for beginner fly casters, you know, it never hurts to kind of have that a little bit heavier line just as you begin, just because it's going to help you feel that rod load. You're going to get a better, you know, kind of action out of that rod, which I think will slow down your casting stroke, and you can start to really feel, you know, the dynamics of the cast. So, you know, I always say, like, I have people constantly reaching out about, you know, which line weight to pair with their rod. And it's hard because a lot of the rod manufacturers don't necessarily list off the specific grain weight range that that rod can, say, handle or excel at.
Gotcha.
So if you are starting with, you know, look up the action of your rod. You know, if it's a fast action rod, I definitely suggest, you know, uplining one size, say put a 6-weight line on that 5-weight rod if it's a fast rod, or, you know, if it's medium fast, you know, I think you know, more true to weight size, like a 5 for that would be good. And we do about a half size heavy on most of our lines just to kind of help compensate for, you know, the so much of the lines on the market being heavily overweighted. Gotcha. But we like to, you know, we want to stick as close to true as possible just because, you know, a lot of people do really enjoy the more true to feel lines for their rods, whether that be, you know, that's just how they prefer. They like the feel of the way it casts. And then as you get into, you know, the saltwater world and people making longer casts and longer shots, then you really see the advantages of having a more true to line weight, just because when you're casting 60, 70, 80 feet, You know, having that lighter line is going to allow that line to stay aerialized, you know, fly through the air with a lot easier. It's going to cause, you know, once you have that casting down, then you realize the lighter line is less effort to cast. You know, it creates a better, you know, landing and presentation on top of the water, because the more weight, the more it's going to slap down. But there's so much variation within fly lines and fly rods. It really comes down to a lot of preference. But I would say if you're starting out, you know, look at the action of your rod. If it's a fast rod, definitely, you know, go up a size. And even if it's, you know, medium fast, I think for beginner casters, that overweighted, the heavier line makes it a little bit easier as you learn. And then from there, you can go and find your own preferences, see what you prefer, and so forth.
That's a great big topic, Roy, when you think about the weighting, because that's a good question, you know, like on the rods, why not just put the grain weight on the rod, right? It seems like that would be an easier way to make sure, even to get away from, because couldn't you just forget about almost the line? Well, I don't know if you can forget about the line weight, but if you knew the grain weight, if somebody told you the grain weight of the rod, you could tell them what line to put on, right?
Oh, yeah. It makes my life 10 times easier. You know, I wish that the rods all listed the grain weights that were, you know, obviously it's going to be a range because the rods can handle a variety, but just having that knowledge of the grain weight makes things so much easier when you're trying to match a line to that rod. And it's so hard because, you know, even with some of the fly lines out on the market, you can't even figure out what grains they are because they don't list it sometimes. And that makes it hard for somebody that says, you know, I'm casting this line, I love the way it casts on my rod. And I go, perfect, you know, do you know the grain weight of that line? And that's the best way that I can get you set up with a line that's going to, you know, have the same feel and load your rod the way that you're used to.
There you go. Yeah, no, that's a good talk. Maybe we can dig into that one at a later point as well. And you mentioned the AFTA standard. There's some things we won't dig in deep because it gets a little technical, but that is a great tip on the fast action. You know, if you can, you know, verify it's a fast action rod. And how would you, and how would somebody verify if their rod is fast versus medium versus slow action?
So all the manufacturers seem to do a great job at listing that in the description of their rods. It's a crucial part of information that I think is a must when you're describing a rod. You know, and if you can, you know, kind of the newer carbon fiber rods are coming out, you can always kind of assume they're more on the fast side. Whereas, you know, you can think of, say, like a fiberglass rod is going to be a slow action, or bamboo. And then you get, you know, a fair amount that, you know, will be listed as more of a medium fast. And, you know, so I would say you can always look at the rod manufacturer's website for the details of that rod. And 99% to 100% of the time, it'll list the action of the rod.
Yeah, list action. Okay, good. And we just kind of touched on, you know, the five way, because that's kind of your middle of the road. But like you said, if this could be a four weight, this could be a six weight, seven weight, you know, but that thing holds true. If you're using a fast action rod, if it's a 9 foot, you know, three weight, then you probably would want to go with maybe a four weight. So it would actually, just because everybody's going a little bit heavier. Well, it's an interesting, I think that's one question, right? I guess maybe you can answer that. Is that true? Is that pretty much true across all weights?
You know, it's interesting. It seems like for the longest time, there was this huge direction of overweighting the lines, you know, making it easier to like punch a cast and kind of feel that rod load. But I've been seeing more and more people coming back looking for more of that true to weight feel. So it's like there's a good mix within, you know, the industry and fly fishing community of what they prefer. You know, I like to fish kind of for trout specifically. I like more of I have a fiberglass rod that I love to cast, and I love, you know, kind of more of that medium fast. You know, sometimes those really fast action rods are great for, you know, they're great for throwing streamers. They're great for, you know, good roll casts with like a indicator heavy multi-nymph rig. Like that faster action rod is going to give you that more punching power with the backbone to turn that stuff over with a lot more ease. Whereas, you know, the slower action rods, it takes a little bit more oomph and technical capability just with, you know, casting to turn over some of that heavier stuff. But, you know, it's really hard to beat throwing a dry dropper on a glass rod and, you know, just it's just a lot of, at least for me, you know, it's a lot of fun. So it's definitely a good mix. And I think as you get into the sport, you'll find your own preferences and what you prefer. So
with over 40 years of experience in coffee, Joe and the Anglers team roast a full range of coffees with their one major goal. You know it, delivering excellent coffee to every single angler. Responsibly sourced from farms using sustainable growing practices, you can rest easy knowing you are doing your part. The Artist Series also, they have the Artist Series going on right now. $1 of each sale goes to Casting for Recovery. They have a blend for every taste, a dry dropper on the go, bag option, a roast sampler. You can check out Anglers right now. It's time to step up to better coffee and more impact for the fish that we know and love. Check out Anglers, wetflyswing.com/anglers. That's A-N-G-L-E-R-S to get a bag of greatness today. That's Anglers right now.
Well, let's talk just kind of briefly dig in, because we're not going to get super technical on this, but you've mentioned a couple things, the PVC free and you know, the clear line and stuff. Talk a little about, just give us the, you know, the background on the line, the actual physical part of the line. I mean, what is, describe that for somebody who's never heard of what a line is made of.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, for the longest time, and the majority of most fly lines on the market are made out of PVC vinyl material. So if you think of, like, a great way I like to describe it is, if you think of like a PVC pipe, that's generally kind of the starting material. And then for the vinyl lines, you add different plasticizers, which are different chemicals to kind of react with that vinyl to make it, you know, softer, more flexible, you know, which you would do for more of like a trout cold water conditions. Whereas you could add also different plasticizers that are going to make it stiffer and make it more resistant to, say, like salt water and warm weather. Whereas our lines are PVC free, so we use naturally buoyant plastics. We use a whole range of, you know, both PUs and PEs and copolymers. And for anybody listening, PUs like polyurethane, a PE would be like polyethylene. A great variety of plastics. So
what are, you know, so describe on the fly line itself, just describe, you mentioned the PVC free and sort of, so somebody who doesn't know much about lines, what are lines, could they be made of out there?
Certainly. So the majority of fly lines on the market have always been made from vinyl. And for vinyl, it's just a different kind of plastic material. And then we also have for monic, and then for say things like airflow would be the other PVC free. Use a mix of different plastic materials, like say, PEs and PUs and other copolymers, which is basically just, you know, you can think of polyethylene or polyurethane. So it's a wide variety, that we use specifically for the actual coating itself, compared to say a traditional vinyl line, which is what the market's, where the fly lines originally were made with a vinyl resin plastic. And then, so with the fly line, you have a core material, you know, which can range from a, say like a monofilament, mono core. And then you can also have a wide range of different braided cores, like say Dacron or nylon. And that, all that comes into play and gives you variability for how that line's going to perform, you know, especially for how it performs in the heat versus the cold as well. A lot of the lines on the market, like I said, are vinyl resins. And for that, you can think of kind of like a PVC pipe is kind of a similar vinyl resin. And then to make that vinyl, you know, react in different ways, they add different plasticizers, which would be, you know, different chemical additives to help change the properties of that vinyl to, say, make it softer and more supple, or more, you know, rigid and stiff for, say, like saltwater applications versus freshwater. But for us, it's great, you know, being PVC free and using more naturally buoyant plastics. And then the materials that we do use, you don't have to add those additives to them, which allows you for a little bit more versatile line, a line that's going to be more durable as well, because over time, those plasticizers eventually will leach out and leave that line, you know, which one, breaks down your line a lot faster. You start to see those voids and cracks in the line.
Yeah.
And then also for like, say, floating agents like glass beads, you know, things like that. When you step on a line that has glass beads in it, you're going to crush those glass beads and you're going to lose that floatability. So by kind of having more of like a, I guess you could think of it more like a bare bones recipe with less things added, that means it's, you know, it doesn't have those certain materials that are going to leach out and leave over time, which affects mm-hmm. the performance. So our lines, you know, last a lot longer, they're more durable, and, you know, they're a little bit more environmentally friendly as well, just because, you know, those additives can leach into the water systems.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. So like you're saying, it's basically a lot of the lines out there in the past or even currently are kind of vinyl, and they have their like PVC essentially. And then, but you're saying you guys make yours with a different type of, it's not PVC, it's more like a just different type of plastic, different type. Describe that, the plastic you guys are using. Or, is it just you guys in Airflow, or is there other people doing this?
As far as I know, it's just ourselves and Airflow that are making PVC-free fly lines. And I believe that Airflow uses, you know, I can't speak on them specifically, yeah. but, you know, they use, you know, a lot of PUs, like polyurethane, you know. And then we use a wide range of both PUs as well as PEs, which would be like polyethylene, as well as a mix of kind of some other copolymers, which is just, you know, kind of a mixture of plastic materials. So, you know, our lines are extremely unique in that way because it's something that, you know, nobody else has that same sort of recipe in the materials that we're using. So it's extremely unique. And that gives us, you know, a lot of advantages. And one specifically is actually our, you know, our clear line, because it's without having any of those additives and using a naturally buoyant plastic, you're able to create a line that is essentially transparent and it still floats very well and so forth.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you mentioned the clear line. That was something I wanted to dig into. So I think we got a good little summary there. That's basically pretty straightforward. If we want to dig in, we can go deeper there, but it's like, it's the PVC stuff versus the, you know, the PUs, the PEs on the lines. And then, like you said, this allows you to create a clear line, which you don't see, you know, you do see the clear intermediate stuff like for, you know, the lakes, but you don't mm-hmm. see too many of the dry, the actual lines for streams being clear. Why is a clear line good? And then why are most lines not clear?
So kind of just like you said, you know, the materials that those other companies are using, they can make the clear tip, but it's going to sink. That's where they're going to have that intermediate. But because we use those specific naturally buoyant materials, we can create that clear line that floats. And it's just been, you know, it's always been a huge favorite of many anglers in the saltwater world. You know, our lines have been used by, you know, tournament winners for, you know, different tarpon tournaments as well as, you know, permit. It's always been a huge favorite for the saltwater specifically, just because you get such a better advantage with that stealth of a clear line on your side. You know, when you're dealing with fish that are extremely spooky or high pressured and they start to see a lot of fly lines, or, you know, even if they're not seeing fly lines, they have, you know, aerial predators and they're, you know, very skittish, which is, you know, you see a lot more kind of in the saltwater world. So that clear line, you know, even when it hits, say you make a sloppy cast and it smacks down on the water, that fish is going to spook, you know, just from the impact. But then when they look up to look around for predators and threats, they can't see that clear line. So then they can quickly switch back into feeling comfortable and get back into that feeding mode. So, you know, we've had people using the clear lines for, you know, tarpon, permit, and bonefish, and just absolutely swearing by, you know, the effects and the advantages of having that clear line. And it's been really cool to see, actually. I've had a lot more, you know, recently starting to pick up using the clear lines for trout. You know, I love fishing the clear lines here in Colorado in the summer months for trout, just because of how high pressure, you know, these fish get. You know, they start to see fly lines every day and they associate that fly line with a, you know, a bad experience of getting yanked out of the water by their lip.
Right.
So when you start to use that clear line, those fish are a little bit more relaxed. You're not going to spook as many, especially in crystal clear, you know, water conditions where the visibility is really high. So that clear line gives you a lot of advantages. And another great thing is, with that clear line, you can really shorten up your leader system, because the leader system, they use very long leaders to kind of help protect from lining that fish.
Yeah.
So you could use like a 14-foot leader on like a tiny, you know, stream that's crystal clear, just so you don't spook those fish with your line. But then having the clear tip or the full clear line gives you such a great advantage, because especially on windy days, you know, you don't want to be throwing a 12, 14-foot leader. So you can really shorten up that leader, still have all the stealth, and, you know, it's going to make your presentation better without, you know, a shorter leader. And you're going to have, you know, a lot more fish to the net and spook a lot less fish. I actually had a great conversation with a customer the other day who was, he was out fishing in Colorado, and he was out with his buddies, and they all had the same, he said they all had the same flies rigged up, and his friends were catching a few, but he was just cleaning them up, and all his friends came over to him like, what are we doing wrong? Like, what's going on? And he's like, well, I did just get this Henley Phantom tip the other day, and which is our 15-foot clear tip. And he was just, you know, elated with, you know, seeing the results firsthand. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, makes me super happy. And, you know, we're all super passionate about, you know, fly fishing in general at Monic. And we really just want to make, you know, the best fly lines possible for the people to go out and really enjoy themselves.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that makes a lot of sense with the line. I mean, just like you're saying, you know, shorter leaders is easier, can be easier, right? And then also, I could also see it if you're fishing like up, you know, casting upstream, a dry fly, you know, where you're hitting the spot, but then your line below that, you might be spooking fish. But with a clear line, you could just lay all your line on the water, cast upstream, and you're right, you could probably hit more fish as you go down towards you.
Exactly, yeah. So it's, I think especially kind of as we saw the fly fishing industry really saw a boom throughout in the whole outdoor industry through COVID, you know, a lot of people getting back outdoors. So, you know, which I love to see, but it also means, you know, more angler pressure for those fisheries that we do all enjoy going to. So it's like, why not have every advantage you can on your side, you know, to have a good day.
Exactly. Do you guys have, so would you say, I mean, it sounds like, yeah, salt, obviously you could hear the advantages there. Do you, you know, as far as your customers, are you kind of like an equal 50-50 fresh salt, or do you lean more towards one or the other?
You know, it's, I'd say it's a little bit more like 60-40 salt versus fresh. And it's, we're starting to see a lot more traction with our freshwater lines, trout specific lines. And it's really just because Monic, when it was started, it just immediately was grabbed a hold by the saltwater community just because of the specific application for, you know, if you're fishing to those big schools of tarpon rolling through, you get a lot more hookups and a lot less, you know, you don't spook those fishes easily.
Refusals.
Yep.
So maybe you could just take us there for a little bit, because we haven't gone down that track far as the founding story. Like, do you know that history? Can you give us a little bit of a quick little snippet on the history of Monic?
Yeah, of course. It's actually, so it's perfect because we basically got our start with the clear floating line. And Bob Goodale, the owner of the company, he was a chemical engineer by trade. And, you know, he worked in a variety of different fields. And, you know, as he got older, he always loved fly fishing. And it's a little over 20 years ago. So the company started in 1995. But so like 2 years leading up to before the company was starting, he was out actually fishing in Belize for bonefish and permit. And it was a super windy day, as it always tends to be when you're fishing in the salt. And he actually had a guide who was, you know, he was like, you got to use this 14-foot leader, you know, so you don't spook the fish, so you can actually catch these fish. And Bob was having a hard time, you know, very frustrating time trying to punch that lead, turn that leader over. And, you know, he thought to himself, you know, being a chemical engineer, just why don't we just make the fly line clear? And that was kind of the birth of Monic. And so he invented the first ever clear floating line, you know, patented it. And he's been, you know, that's kind of been Monic's kind of claim to fame, if you will. And obviously we've really continuously improved upon the clear line to make it as best as possible. Because the more you do it, the more you learn about, you know, what we can improve upon. You know, a lot of the older lines were had a lot of issues with memory and things of that nature. They were a little bit stiffer. And then, you know, just within kind of like the past 7-8 years, we actually worked with a company to help develop this, you know, proprietary core material, which we call the Monocore, which you can find on our Henley series. And mm-hmm. it has a great, you know, a good amount of stretch to it, which keeps it extremely supple. You don't have to deal with, you know, a rat's nest in your line, and it's a very supple line. And then also on the flip side, you know, when you're fighting a, you know, 100-pound tarpon, having that stretch in your line actually really helps protect that, keeping that hook implanted in the fish. Because when if you picture that fish coming up and, you know, doing those huge, massive head shakes, jumping out of the water, that whole line can stretch with those head shakes, which, you know, really eliminates a lot of, you know, the leader line snapping, as well as, you know, the hook just getting popped out. So a lot of guys really do enjoy that stretch, and it keeps it really supple. So you can even fish that Henley line in, you know, colder conditions, because it has, you know, very supple core material. And, you know, I've fished it in like 35 degree weather, and, you know, it'll get, you know, some memory off the reel, just like any mm-hmm. line would in that situation. But the nice thing is you can just hand stretch it, and it becomes lifeless again. So that's been, you know, a huge favorite. And then just recently we came out with a new version of our Phantom tip with species specific tapers for saltwater applications. And we use a new core material, for those new Phantom tips. And then we also have our Saltwater Master with those tapers. And that actually uses what we call our SensaCore, which is just a little bit more added stiffness, because like I was saying earlier, you know, there's such a variety of anglers in the world that prefer different things. Some people like the stretch, some people don't like the stretch.
Right.
So this is just another option to give to those people that, you know, want some more sensitivity, you know, which can make, you know, on the flip side, that makes the hook sets, you know, a little bit more immediate, as there's not much energy lost throughout that line as you go for that strip set. And then also, you know, in those extreme heats, the stiffer core material kind of helps keep that line, you know, I guess uniform. It just stays rigid enough that it's not going to have any memory, but it's going to be stiff enough that it, you know, continues to perform in 100+ degrees. And, you know, the Henley will as well, but you know, it's just options and variety for different scenarios and things like that.
Gotcha. How long typically, and I know it's probably different versus salt versus fresh, but somebody buys a line, you know, one of your lines, or it's just in general, I mean, how long should a line be expected to last for somebody?
It depends on how much you're fishing it. But, you know, it's funny you say that, because I actually, about a month ago, I had a customer who just wanted to show me the Henley, or it wasn't a Henley, it was an older clear, but the clear line that he'd been fishing for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And it lasted that long. You know, it was yellow now just from the UV damage, but
yeah,
you know, the lines are extremely durable. And we always guarantee all of our lines for a full year, you know, no matter how much you're fishing. If anything ever comes up with the line, or you find that it, you know, maybe got stuck around a rock or some coral and delaminated a section, you know, if it's within the first year of buying it, like, we'll replace it for you, no questions asked. And
yeah,
because we really want to take care of our customers. And, you know, I think being able to have a durable line that, you know, is going to continue to perform well, as long as, you know, you once in a while clean that line, it's just, you know, you can easily get 2-4 years out of the line.
2-4 years. Yeah, there you go.
If not more. Or you could be the guy sending me a 20-year-old line.
Yeah, or the 20-year line, exactly. I'm thinking, you know, I'm kind of thinking, like, you know, you're the, you know, if you're the person that's, you know, maybe you're getting out a couple times, doing a couple, you know, couple trips per month, something like that. You know, maybe you're doing like 20 trips per year, that range. You should be able to get, you know, you're going to definitely get like 3-5 years out of that line pretty easy.
Definitely. Yep. Yeah. And we really like to, you know, stand behind that durability. Like I said, like, if anything comes up, you know, we'll change it out. You know, we're really pride ourselves on customer service as well, because we want to make a line that, you know, is going to perform and make you have a great day out in the water. Like, there's nothing worse than going out and having your gear fail on you. And, you know, of course it's going to happen. You know, the rare event that, you know, maybe something happened to the line, but, you know, the biggest thing for us is making sure everybody's enjoying the line, having a good lifespan out of that line. Like, I love to suggest for, you know, beginners, like we were kind of talking about earlier, like our Monic 101 line, the basic trout line, we sell it for $54.99. So something that is going to be, you know, a lower price point that, you know, is be affordable to a lot of people compared to some of the higher prices. And with that line, you're getting something that's going to last you, you know, more than, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years. And, you know, there's nothing worse than starting out and you get this line that, you know, and then all of a sudden it falls apart on you or stops floating.
Right.
And then it's going to turn you off from, you know, maybe fly fishing. And so, like, I love suggesting that line to any beginners out there just because of, you know, the durability is going to allow you to fish that line time and time again without any issues. And it's going to help improve that learning curve as well. You know, really proud of ourselves on making sure everybody's having a good time and enjoying the product.
Is that the difference between if you say, you know, you've got a lot of different types of lines? And I think, are yours manufactured in the U.S.?
Yep. So everything we make is made right here in Boulder, Colorado in the shop. And we try to source as many of our materials from the States as we can. You know, obviously that can get a little bit tricky with, you know, different plastics and other things of that nature. But, you know, we do our best to source everything, you know, that we can within the States. And we really pride ourselves on being a completely American-made fly line. Like, start to finish, everything is, you know, if you get a Monic line, everything was put together, assembled, you know, the line is manufactured, you know, like 20 feet from where I might I'll spool them up for you and package them. So it's a completely American-made fly line, and I don't think there's many other companies that can say the same.
That's cool. So that's awesome. And when you think about, let's take it back to that person again. So maybe they've, you know, you've got the beginner, but then you've also got the person that maybe has a few rods, you know, they've got a, whatever, a 4-weight, a 6-weight, an 8-weight. If they're going and they want to check out the Monic lines or maybe just lines in general, is it just as easy? Like we were talking before, if you got the 8-weight, you know, you kind of maybe if it's fast, then you go for a 9-weight Monic line or anything else to know when somebody's choosing a line here?
So we have a great variety of lines for, you know, a multitude of applications. And like I was saying before, we're extremely transparent with those grain weights. So if you click on any of the lines on the website and you scroll to the bottom, you'll see a chart that specifically lays out those grain weights for each line, which gives you a good starting point to know, you know, if you have a general idea of, say, a line that you like the way it performed on that rod in the past. But otherwise, you know, kind of looking through all the lines, it might get a little overwhelming just because of if you're not sure of which application you might need or kind of the pros and cons of a specific, you know, one line I'm thinking of in general is our Skyline Plus, which is made on a gel spun core, which is basically zero stretch, you know, phenomenal bass line, streamer line. You know, people love that line for tarpon as well. So I guess, you know, I like to always say, like, if you have any questions, just reach out to me. You know, there's a chat box right there on the website. You know, I'll get those directly. You know, always feel free to give us a call. Like, I love walking people through the products, you know. And then I think a lot of people, you know, can get a little overwhelmed by the information listed there. But we put everything right there on the website. You know, it's like, try to make it as easy as possible for somebody to understand the applications and where this line's going to excel at. But I love talking to customers, and that's one of my favorite parts of the job is being able to help somebody out, get the perfect line for what they want and what they need, and just have an amazing time fishing line. So if you ever have any questions, just give us a call and I'm happy to help.
Yeah, that's always a good tip is to call either, you know, you guys or even your local fly shop or whatever and dig into that. This is cool. So that makes sense there. And let's just take it to let's do a couple examples. Let's say I have a, you know, a 4-weight rod, like a 9-foot 4-weight. And I believe it's a fast action rod, right? So mm-hmm. I believe it's a fast action. So you're saying if I came in, I could just, you know, if I was going to grab a line, I might grab a, like maybe a five weight, right? That one of your lines, like maybe the five weight, the 101, is that, would that be the line for trout?
Yeah, that would be perfect. You know, I would definitely, with that fast action rod, I tend to suggest, you know, going with that upline one size, as it's just going to help load that faster rod even better. The one, you know, if you're looking to, you know, get sort of the basic trout set up, then the 101's a perfect line. You know, it's going to do everything well. And then the next step up from that would be like our icicle line, which is similar in construction. So both of those lines can be fished year round. They're extremely supple. They've got a braided nylon core with a very supple coating material on top with our slickening agent built in as well. So it's a line that you can, you know, I fish that year round here in Colorado. And then the key difference with the icicle is it has a little bit more of an advanced taper. It's what we call our javelin taper. So it's a little bit more aggressive than the basic kind of standard trout taper. So it's going to do really well at, you know, farther roll casts. It's going to do really well at turning over those indicator multi-nymph rigs. Throwing streamers is going to be a lot easier with that more aggressive style taper. But at the same time, you can obviously still turn over and have a delicate presentation with a dry fly, dry dropper.
Right.
You might just lengthen the leader up a little bit to get some more of that delicacy. But that's kind of our most popular trout line just due to its versatility. And that taper is, the more aggressive taper is really nice, especially, you know, dealing with some of the windy days here in Colorado. You know, I fish a lot of tight stream creeks as well. So having that more aggressive front end of that taper, you only need about 4 or 5 feet of line out of the tip of your rod, and you can already start to feel that mass loading your rod, making quick, you know, quick shots a lot easier.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I'd say I usually always recommend that one, but if, you know, you're just starting out, you're not sure what you like yet, like you really can't beat a $55 American made fly line at the 101.
The 101.
It's just going to last forever. It's going to do everything well. But if you're really trying to excel with the trout fishing and you want it something that is going to give you a little bit more advantage on the water, then for, you know, $79.99, you can get the icicle line and have a little bit easier time turning over some of those, you know, more advanced rigs.
Togan's Fly Shop, providing superior quality products at an affordable price. I want you to check out the Togan's YouTube channel right now if you're interested in connecting with some fly patterns. They've got a bunch of stuff on Stillwater, but they've got a mix of fly tires from around the world that are doing some good stuff on the Togan's channel. They've got you covered for sure if you're looking for in-house products, fly tying materials, leading brands that you know and trust. The cool thing is right now, they've expanded, and for a number of years, they've been providing mostly gear around fly tying and focused with Stillwater, but they've expanded out and now they have rods, reels, lines, and a bunch of other gear to fill the satchel. So when you're heading out to that next big trip and you need to make that purchase, you can head over to Togan's, grab your fly tying materials, and pick up the other necessary pieces of equipment. Since 2005, Togan's has been doing it, over delivering on price and customer service. And now it's time for you to check out Togan's for yourself. Wetflyswing.com/Togan's, T-O-G-E-N-S. You support this podcast by clicking over through Togan's online right now.
Then on, you know, if we talk just quickly here, like on, you know, species wise, right? So we're talking kind of trout, but you've got other species out there. If you had to say, you know, what are your, you know, what are the most common species you guys have fly lines for? Do you have like a few that are maybe a, you know, 5 or 10 that are kind of the most, the ones you hear about the most other than trout?
Yeah, definitely. So I, like I was saying with, you know, getting our start with the clear line, we've always been a huge favorite in the saltwater world.
Like everything, tarpon, like is that for all saltwater species?
Yeah, like pretty much for all saltwater species, but they've been extremely popular for tarpon and permit and bonefish specifically, as those tend to be the biggest, you know, names of species that people love to chase in that kind of, in the salt world. So we've actually just come out with a species-specific taper for all three of those species. Well, we've got a tarpon taper, and we offer tarpon taper, a permit taper, and a bonefish taper. They all have, you know, slight variations, which make them excel a little bit better for, you know, chasing those exact species. And we sent those out to, you know, all of our guides that, you know, are hardened anglers, that's their bread and butter. They love to chase those specific fish. And, you know, through like 2 years of just kind of going back and forth, we can tweak it here and tweak it here just to make it the best possible line. But we offer all those in both a phantom tip, which is going to be the 15 feet clear tip, and then also our saltwater master series, which is actually kind of have the slickening agent built in. So when you add the slickening agent to the clears, you kind of lose that clarity. So that's a little bit of a trade-off when fishing a clear line. It's not going to be quite as slick as, say, a traditional line, because with those colored lines, you can build in the slickening agent, and that slickening agent is built right into the line. It's not like a top coat or anything like that. So it's going to continue to stay slick throughout the lifespan of the line. So we just want to offer those options to people that, you know, might not necessarily want to fish the clear. You know, it's definitely a little bit of a difference.
Oh, right. You
know, fishing a clear line.
So a slicker line is going to usually be better.
Yeah, you know, like a slicker line is going to shoot better. It's going to cast, you know, a little bit farther, easier, you know, because it's, you know, a little bit more slick. And it's also going to, you know, keep that line, you know, casting well, even as it gets dirty or it starts to pick up salt or anything like that. And the nice thing with the slickening agent actually is it helps repel that salt, dirt, and gunk buildup on the line. And some people just really love, you know, having a slick line, like it just shoots really nice, so on. And whereas on the flip side, you have somebody that's, you know, a diehard permit angler, or, you know, they chase permit every single year, and you want every single advantage you can get to get one of the spookiest fish on the planet, then you're going to want that clear line, just because it's going to really up your odds when you do get that shot at, say, the fish of a lifetime.
Yeah,
the chances of you spooking that fish are greatly diminished, and same for tarpon and bonefish as well. And
gotcha.
It was actually really cool. I was just on a trip in the Bahamas chasing bonefish, and it's just amazing to see firsthand, you know, somebody would throw out a colored line, you know, those fish would all spook and scatter, throw out that clear line. And like, it's pretty skinny water you're fishing to it for these fish. So when that clear line lays out, obviously it makes a little disturbance on the top of the water. So they kind of spook just a little bit from that disturbance, but then they immediately swing right back around and will eat the shrimp pattern or crab pattern that you're throwing. No questions asked.
Yeah. This is the trip you were up there with Dennis with Isbister.
Yeah. It was an amazing time. So always great time hanging out with Dennis and doing some content for Monic and Wildfish Places. And it's just, you know, when you see it firsthand, it, you know, you immediately become a believer in the clear. And I love talking to customers that, you know, might be a little hesitant at first going with the clear line, but then they try it and they'll see like a scenario like that. And they just, you know, it truly does make a big difference when fishing to the fish that are spooky, you know, highly pressured.
Right.
And crystal clear water conditions.
So you guys put together, a show down there. Was this like a, is that going to be coming out here? I'm not sure how Dennis does it, but you were just doing a Bahamas show episode.
Yeah. So Dennis, he might pull a couple episodes out of that just cause there was so much great action going on.
Oh, yeah.
But basically he runs the Wild Fish, Wild Places TV show, which you can catch on the Outdoor Channel as well as the Fishing Network. And then it's also available on Amazon. And I think it might be coming to Netflix soon as well, but so we work with Dennis and he helps, you know, run the social media, you know, provide us with some content from those trips. And then I was lucky enough to be able to go down with him on this trip to build some very specific Monic content where, you know, I could geek out and nerd out about the fly lines in front of the camera and kind of run through the very specifics of each line. And it was a great trip. And just feel like, you know, every time you get a new experience like that, it just really helps you grow as an angler and help me grow with an even more, you know, firsthand experience of using the variety of saltwater lines that we have.
Right. Did you have some action? What were the species you guys were getting into?
We caught lots of bonefish, caught some triggerfish, barracuda. I caught a really, one of my favorite fish from the trip was a horse-eyed yellowtail jack. And I caught that on the Skyline Plus, which is that gel spun core. So you know, it's super sensitive and you get like immediate hook sets. And I was actually throwing a popper out there, you know, hitting some structure along the coral, cause they like to kind of hang out in those ambush points. And then I saw this shark coming by. It was just a nurse shark, I think, and had these two big yellow-tailed jacks riding right on its tail. And they do that because as the shark spooks up the little bait fish, they'll swim right and clean up the smaller fish. So I threw a popper right over them, and this one just comes up and, boom, just smacks it right on top of the water and ripped me out to my backing, you know, immediately. And I'm fighting him, and finally get him back to the fly line, takes me right back out to my backing. And at that point I was getting scared that he'd get eaten by a shark, because there's so many predators there, you know, big barracuda, sharks everywhere. And luckily was able to land him, and that was my top experience there. You know, it was just such a cool experience, especially, you know, seeing a fish like that eat on the top water. It's hard to beat that. But the bone fishing is amazing there. You know, it's just the clarity of the water. You know, we were at Acklins, which is a smaller island, just like kind of in the southern end of the Bahamas chain. But it's almost like if you think of it kind of like a backwards sea. So like the island's kind of the sea, and then that gap in between the sea, they have about 500 square miles of flats there, which is just, you know, amazing for fishing opportunities. And, you know, you could spend your whole life there and still probably not touch everything.
Yeah. Were you guys at a lodge there?
So it's kind of a lodge, but also kind of a little bit like a, not quite a DIY setup, but it's called Salina Point Adventures Angling. And they've got a really nice setup there. It's a smaller house where you walk in, you know, beautiful dining room, great hosts in Alicia and Ryan Davey. He runs the operation there, and he guides for Steelhead in the OP for half the year. And then the other half, he'll go down and run this lodge in the Bahamas. And, you know, can't say enough great things about that place. Just, you know, great setup, amazing, delicious food, you know, fresh fish pretty much every day. And you can actually hike down 20 minutes just and go to the water. And that was a spot where we would see trigger fish every single day, you know, barracuda. You know, that's where the jacks always come through there. And there's just so much opportunity. And if you're looking for something that's, you know, not quite like the high end lodge where you feel like you're in a, you know, big resort and you have a guide that's taking you out every single day and holding your hand, like, this place is a little bit more like geared towards the angler that, you know, is a avid fisherman, somebody that, you know, can go out kind of by themselves. And, you know, it's nice because you have the local guides there giving you intel. But then you might just get dropped off and kind of walk on your own for, you know, a couple hours, just looking the flats. And to me, that's a little bit more rewarding when you get to kind of do it yourself, start to finish. I mean, don't get me wrong, if you walk with the guide, you're going to see about 10 times as many fish, because they know exactly, you know, their eyes are just so much more in tune for seeing the fish in that water. Like the bonefish are incredibly stealthy. Just with that silver, it's almost like a mirror, so they reflect their surroundings in a sense. And unless, you know, you can see them moving, it's almost like it's very hard to spot them.
That's cool. This is amazing.
So that was an amazing trip, and you know, for scenarios like that, the clear line pays dividends. And I was hoping to get a shot at a permit, because they do see them quite often, but unfortunately I didn't get to see a permit on the trip. But you can also see tarpon, permit, you know, just the amount of life there is, it's amazing. You know, sea turtles everywhere.
Exactly. No, that's one of the cool. Yeah, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the Bahamas. I guess we've had some episodes. Oliver White, who I think we're gonna hopefully get on again here, way back in '69, he talked about he went into the Bahamas, and I think he might not be I'm not even sure if he has his lodge still there or not, but no, this is good. I want to start to take it out of here with the top fly challenge.
Okay,
we got this thing going here. So this is really simple for you, and a little bit not as simple for me. But at wetflyswing.com/topfly, we're gonna have a page there where people can enter what they feel is their top fly. They could only have one fly to use. And so for you, we're kind of talking salt water here. So what would be that one fly, that top fly, if you could only pick one?
That's a tough call. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not, you know, living in Colorado, I don't get to get out to the salt as much as I'd like to.
Well, let's do this then, Jarvis. Let's do this.
Yeah, sorry.
You could say for the trip, or if you wanted to take this too, we could definitely go to whatever if you want to go fresh, because probably more people are going to talk fresh anyways, but I was going to leave it open. So if you want to throw out your one trout fly, for sure we'd take that as well.
Definitely. So I'd say for a trout fly, gold-ribbed hare's ear. I just clean up. It's just such a versatile fly. You know, you can fish it everywhere. It's the standard, you know, old school fly, and it just gets the job done.
Is that a Euro? Are you doing like a Euro style or just old school?
Just old school. I'm an old, you know, old school in that sense. I'm not I haven't gone into the world of Euro nymphing quite yet. You know, I can see how effective it is, especially, you know, for competitions and whatnot, but
yeah. Do you think everybody eventually touches on, if not goes all in, but touches on a little Euro? Do you think it's one of those? I always compare it to the spey. I remember back in the day before I did the spey rod, right? I remember I was a single hand steelhead guy, and somebody told me along the way, like, you're going to get into spey, and I never thought I would, and of course you did. Do you think Euro is the same way, where everybody eventually is going to be getting into Euro?
I don't think so. I think that there's a lot to, like, learn from that Euro nymphing style, and I think for specific, say, scenarios, like some fast-moving pocket water or some holes that are pretty deep, but, you know, you have a raging top current, then that you really can't beat that, you know, presentation. So I think it's something that all trout fishermen can learn from, you know. But for me, I really enjoy the visual aspect of seeing, you know, that indicator go down, that drive dropper just get submerged. So something about that for me, I think, is just always kind of going to be where I'm at. But I've definitely taken from that and tried to use some of those tight line techniques for, you know, specific scenarios where it's going to be a lot more beneficial. And then I got to say, for the trip, the gotcha shrimp pattern just absolutely crushed it on those bonefish. It was a tan body, and the gold sparkle flash off the tail was just, it drove those fish crazy. So if anybody's going bone fishing, definitely get you some of those gotcha flies.
Yeah, the gotchas. That's cool. All right, good. So just to reiterate this top fly challenge, which we're just kicking off here, wetflyswing.com/topfly, and anybody can enter. They just go in there and enter their top fly. And the cool thing about this is we're going to pick a few winners, and we're going to hand out some boxes of flies to people to win. So whoever gets their fly chosen, chooses the, you know, and I haven't even chosen mine yet, right? If I had to pick one fly, so this will be a fun one. And so good. So we'll leave that there, and we're gonna keep that little challenge going as we go. But yeah, as we start to take it out of here, I mean, I know we've obviously touched on kind of all over the place on the lines, but again, take it back to that person that needs a new line. Maybe they've got an old line that's all cracked, and they've been using for a little bit too long, and they're thinking about getting a new line. Any other words of advice on choosing a line? You know, if they're just to go to, say, you know, a website and look at some lines, or your website. Any other tips here?
You know, I would say, you know, understanding what rod you're pairing that line with, and then also understanding what kind of style fishing you're doing the most or you enjoy the most. So we do have lines that are very great dry fly lines. So if you're somebody that loves to throw dry flies, you know, we've got a line specifically geared towards that. If you're somebody that, you know, it's primarily nymphing and throwing streamers and, you know, dry droppers, then the icicle is going to be a perfect line for that. If you're somebody that's, you know, looking for something on the little bit lower price point, but something that's going to do everything well, you know, you can't go wrong with the 101. And, you know, like I said, if you ever on the website have any questions that come up, like, we're always there to help, and we really love being able to help out those customers. So if you have anything that comes up, just give us a call and we'll always be happy to help you.
Perfect. Perfect. Good. Well, before we get out of here, I want to take it out. We mentioned basketball at the start, so I got to dig into a little sports here. So what was your position in basketball?
I started off actually as a forward because I was a little bit more of a chubbier kid. And then I just started to really fall in love with basketball, and I would go to this training program where they had, you know, constantly going to basketball camps. And by the time I was about a sophomore, I started to actually play some point guard just because I had the ball handling down, and that was kind of my role.
Sophomore in high school.
Sophomore in high school. So sophomore, junior, and senior year, I played kind of point guard, shooting guard.
Okay, and you're like, what are you? Are you about like 6'2"?
6'1".
Yeah, 6'1".
6'2" would be pushing it a little bit.
So you're playing, so you start out forward early on and then you moved into point guard. Did you play any college ball?
Unfortunately not. You know, I played the intramural. I had a little bit of a temptation just to try to walk on, the Buffs would be, it'd be amazing, but, you get swept up in the college experience and.
Yeah. You could see that you could have been like the Rudy, right? The football, the same sort of thing. You were sitting on the bench for the whole, your whole 4 years, and then you get that one shot to play, which would actually be cool, right?
Yeah. I feel really lucky that, I got to go to such a small, public school. There's obviously pros and cons, but one great pro is, especially for the sports teams, it's like everybody can get included a little bit more. And, my senior year, at that point I got to play the whole game. I would get subbed out for maybe a minute breather, but that was just an awesome experience because, you start to get to some of those really big high schools and, it can start to lose minutes. People are a lot taller than you and whatnot, and the competition goes up. So,
that's it. Yeah.
I had a great experience playing basketball in high school.
Yep. Yep, that's it. No, basketball is a great sport. It's takes a toll on your body a little bit, especially your knees, right? If you're doing a lot of jumping, but
lots of diving on the floor.
Yeah, exactly, diving on the floor. So, what was it? Give us a quick little. Did you have a basketball memory? Like one memory of some play or some game? I remember mine. I had three quarters of the end of the game. Right, I threw it from three quarters, the other free throw line with one hand, and boom, swish.
No way! Oh my god, that's amazing.
But it was 1 second after the buzzer, so it didn't count. But it was still cool. Did you have any moments that stick out?
One game my senior year, it was just one of those days where you're on, and I hit 7 threes that game, and it was just boom, boom, boom. And
wow.
That was just such a cool experience. And then, reading the small town paper the next day, and, it's like Jarvis hits 7 threes and puts the Pittsfield Tigers away.
Pittsfield
just cool.
Tigers. What'd you have? Did you have 30 that night?
Yeah, I had 34 and then 7 rebounds 34. And 4 assists or something like that. So it was a good game. Yeah.
Well, here's a fun fact I heard about. I love this one. For any of the kids out there that are listening to basketball, it's so Wilt Chamberlain, right? Old school. Mm-hmm. I think he still has the record, right? I think he scored 100 points in one NBA game.
Yep.
But the fun fact about that is obviously it's Wilt Chamberlain. He was this giant person and stuff and player, but that game he shot, the reason he went over 100 was he shot all of his free throws. I think it was the only time he did it, but he shot them granny style.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So it just shows you, remember Rick Barry was the greatest free throw shooter of all time as Rick Barry. It just shows you it's one of those funny fun facts because nobody shoots granny style, even though it's the most effective.
And
they've even done stats on it. Some of these teams, if the team would shoot granny style, the team, if they all did it, that team would win the NBA championship every single year. But nobody does it.
They're just afraid to have the publicity of them shooting granny style, I guess, these days. But I always get such a good kick out of, occasionally you'll see a big man now in the NBA who just really struggles with the three free throws. And then you'll see maybe a game or two, they'll try some granny style and, they make them a lot more frequently.
Exactly. Well, and I got one other, I'm kind of going on a random tangent here, but so TV shows, I'm not sure if you watched a lot of TV when you're a kid or in your life at all. What do you have one TV show that sticks out from your, your childhood?
From my childhood.
Or did you watch much TV? I guess maybe even that time you're young enough, you might not even had the old TV, you know, as you know it, as you think of the, like the 80s, 90s TV, right?
Yeah, totally. I was just thinking, cause yeah, growing up like in New Hampshire, especially, it's like, we're always running around the woods and stuff, but I watched my fair share of TV, and I'll never forget watching The Simpsons for the first time, and then watching The Simpsons all throughout my childhood. That was just kind of just one of those shows. It's almost like nostalgic in a way, and I still love it to this day. And
I know
Simpsons was kind of my childhood go-to. Just recently, I just got sucked into Ozarks, and that's been blowing my mind lately.
Ozarks is what's his name? Who's the actor?
Jason Bateman.
You know, I have a funny thing, like not funny, but it's a weird thing with Ozarks. I actually started, I heard about it. I was like, okay, Ozarks. And I started watching like the first few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it's kind of crazy. I had to like literally turn it off just because it was like, wow, I couldn't. I was like having nightmares.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of it's really scary, you know, in that sense. And something of like, I think they just do such a good job at like leaving every episode with a cliffhanger. It's so I'll be like, I know I need to go to bed, so I wake up at 6 a.m. and get to work, but I'm like, but what happens, you know? And I end up watching another and staying up till midnight, and so the story goes.
So that's it. So let's try to create a cliffhanger for this. So if we were going to take one piece out of this episode, put it at the start, and it's our cliffhanger to get people to listen to this episode today, what do you think it would be if we look back at what we talked about? Do we have a cliffhanger, or do you want to make one up now?
Trying to think. I feel like we were pretty straightforward with the information, but maybe like see the advantage of the clear for yourself or something like that, or you know.
Right, like what is the clear exactly? That actually is a good one.
What advantage does the clear give you? ...
The clear line, because nobody there you go. So because nobody has there, you don't, the clear dry line is still like, if you didn't hear about it here today, you might not, right? A lot of people probably don't know about a clear dry line for trout, right? Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't even know that we exist at Monarch. You know, it's, we've been around for a long time, but we've always kind of, you know, it's been an up and down throughout the years, but just really like within the past 5-6 years, everything we have is just, you know, top of the line fly lines that, you know, would stand up to compete with any lines on the market. And I'm really trying to work on just growing the brand awareness. And we kind of, you know, with Bob being an older gentleman, being the owner, got lost in that whole digital wave and just never had much of a presence in the way of marketing. So like, I'll talk to people all the time that go like, Monarch, you're in Boulder, Colorado. I had no idea that there was a fly line company local to me. And at that point, then they're like, oh, I would love to buy a line. Just, you know, who wouldn't want to support a local American made company? So exactly. I hope people listen to this. If, you know, first time ever hearing about Monarch, you know, please, you know, check out the website. We've got lines for everybody. And we'll have some full sync lines too. So if that's your jam, we'll get you covered soon.
Perfect. Perfect. That's a perfect segue out of here. So, yeah, this has been good. I think you know, we'll put some stuff in the show notes for links and things like that. And if they want to take it deeper, I think this is a good intro to a little bit about what you have. And it's been good to connect with you and learn a little bit about your background here. And we'll keep in touch. So yeah, until we dig back into it, Jarvis, I appreciate everything you're doing out there, and looking forward to staying in touch.
Of course, you know, I really appreciate you having me on, Dave, and definitely have to link up, maybe get some fishing in sometime this summer, or we'll get something planned out. And again, I can't really thank you enough for having me on, and you know, I love the show, and I look forward to continue to listen in all the great podcasts you come out with. So thank you, Dave.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Talk soon.
So there you go. Fly lines 101. It's all good. Always good to learn a little bit more about that thing that we're flinging around the air and swinging back and forth. Wetflyswing.com/328. 328 will get you any of the links, probably some bonus videos, and hopefully a random nugget in there. So check it out. Dom's doing a good job putting these together, so would love it if you had a chance to click over and check out the blog. Got a quick listener spotlight before we get out of here. Rafael Victor, Rafael checked in with me on Instagram, and he highlighted that episode we had of New Mexico with Taylor Streit. That was a good one. Taylor broke down some good stuff. if you haven't caught that one, took us back to the 60s in Woodstock, and then we dug into the Rio Grande and some of the good stuff that they have going there. I definitely love this one. It was old school and classic, just the way that I like to do it sometimes. Also, heads up, we got the fly tying, the top fly challenge. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/topfly and submit your number one fly. We want to hear it. We want to get this this list out there, and you get a chance to win a little bit of swag. A little bit of swag if you enter. Jackson is providing this right now. If you jump in there and just enter that fly, you can enter two if you want as well. I'm going to get out of here and get on to the next one. Hope you have a good day. Hope you have a good night or good morning. See you online, or hopefully see you on the water this summer.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.